This episode of the Managing Madrid podcast is brought to you by Hotel Europa in Madrid. I know a lot of you guys ask us for traveling tips to Madrid regularly, what to see, what to do, where to eat, what games to go to, what time of year should I travel in, what is the best time to go to the Bernabeu, where to stay. Here's where you start. You book your hotel at Hotel Europa and you take it from there. Why? Because they're in Seoul. They're right in downtown. You open up your balcony door, you see Seoul, an overhead view. The great thing about that is you close the patio door, you sleep comfortably because no noise gets inside. Seoul, by the way, is where Sergio Ramos and the team go after a trophy the next day, I believe, to have a speech, say some words. A quick metro ride away from the Bernabeu, not far from Cibeles either. And the Wi-Fi is also great. I can vouch for that. I have recorded many podcasts from that hotel. They hook us up a lot and they do a lot for us. And we want to make sure that everybody knows that's where you go. HotelEuropa.eu is where you go to book your stay at Hotel Europa in Madrid. And without further ado, this is the Managing Madrid podcast with myself, Kian Sobani, Gabe Lesra, and Omar Vin to talk about the win over Espanyol. Let's go.
Welcome. It is your Managing Madrid podcast for this week. It is the week of September 23rd, 2018. This is your host, Gabe Lesra. I'm joined by, as always, my man, Kian Sobani. Kian, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic. That's talking good, about a W and a Barca
big
draw.
W dubs. And to enjoy this with us is Omar Vind as well. Om, what's up, man?
I'm also doing great. Couldn't be better. It's not often that Barcelona dropped points, especially given that season they had last year. So I'm doing great.
Yeah, things are good. I didn't watch that game though. So if you're here to have analysis of Barcelona Girona, I don't think any of us watched it. So sorry,
none of us watched it. Just pleasantly check the score and check that there was a bunch of controversy. I'm gonna go watch it tomorrow morning before Churros Tactica. So I'm excited to go.
Dude, yeah, that's dope.
But from what I've read, Piqué was not happy, and just that warms my heart.
Yeah.
If Piqué's not happy, that makes me happy, so I'm doing even better now.
The world is a better place when that dude is in a bad is in a bad mood, just generally. It's like in It's a Wonderful Life, whenever you hear a bell ring, there's a new angel. Well, whenever you see Piqué have a meltdown, there's a new angel. The world has a new angel today. It's beautiful.
That also applies to when Marcos Llorente comes on the pitch.
And Marcos Llorente, we will get to that because Marcos Llorente put in a great shift. But I think the important thing to just talk about right now, Real Madrid 1, Espanyol 0. Real Madrid getting the big W at home on a game where Asensio scored a beautiful legal goal that was initially called offside by the Mateo Lajos, who I am going to rant about later in the show, I guarantee it. And then on VAR, it was proven that he wasn't offside. It was clear and obvious. So the goal counted, and that was the final score. Madrid keeping another shutout despite some catastrophic defending from Sergio Ramos, who really did seem like he wanted to give the game away at the end there. So, guys, what are your initial reactions to this? I mean, this is the first appearance of what I think we can almost begin to call the Real Madrid B team, with Bale and Kroos both on the bench, and the attack featuring Benzema, Asensio, and Isco.
Well, at this point during the podcast, this is where Om usually goes on his epic monologue, and then we have no idea how to take it from there. But maybe I will just start off by saying that this is the most cliche way to kind of start the podcast, but these are the games that you need to just win La Liga. And we knew that none of the games were going to be just steamrolling opponents. And Espanyol, terrific start to the season, by the way. I thought they actually, you know, where other teams in the past this season in the small sample size we have can just buckle under the pressure of going behind a goal against Real Madrid and just collapsing and conceding more and conceding more, conceding a lot of possession and goals. I thought they were admirable in that sense, that they kept it locked. They were pragmatic, and they didn't have many scoring chances, obviously, but they did shoot their shot on a couple of occasions, and Borja Iglesias hitting the crossbar. But my point is that these are the games that sometimes you just need to grind out 1-0, and that's it's very, very good and efficient way to play, especially with the players we were resting, especially Bale. Our main goal scoring threat this season was on the bench. To me, this is a great result. And like Varan said after the game, we're not going to win every game. We're not going to give him money to every game, yeah. Or even by 2 or 3 goals for that matter. But we do need to win every game we can.
Yeah, you got to grind this type of match out. I mean, and it really was a grind. And this is when I'm going to do my Matilda Hoth rant. The refereeing was the main subject in this match for me. He was absolutely a catastrophically bad. I would say it went in Madrid's favor sometimes. It went against Madrid sometimes. It had no particular direction. But what he did was he took over the match by selectively and randomly enforcing rules. So, for example, he would have a play that was a total foul, not call a foul. Then right after that, call a foul on a play that didn't look like a foul at all. He did it constantly. He was constantly running around the pitch, yelling at people. And taking over the game. He allowed a lot of physical play, but then would randomly enforce the rules against a player just because he felt like it. So if you're calling a game and kind of got let him play mentality, which is sort of his style, you can't just then randomly run over and give someone a yellow card for a hard tackle. You've been calling the game like let him play all, you know, the entire match. I mean, it was random, it was bad, and he allowed Espanyol to execute a game plan that really, really hampered Madrid's buildup simply because he allowed a huge amount of physical play and then would randomly stop the physical play for a minute or two and then start it up again. It was all just awful, terrible. Terrible refereeing, and luckily the only people that got, you know, the one that really counted, the people that really counted, it wasn't him, it was the VAR referees got it right. That was good.
In my article, my post-game article, I just described the game as lawless in the sense that maybe it's the fact that we got this game without Gareth Bale. And who knows what kind of tackles that he might have endured in a game that did feel like lawless, or at least randomly selected rules, as you put it. To me, Lahoz just likes cameras. That's all. He's been like this for years. And I think the perfect gig for him would just be going to the WWE. Like, he would be a star referee. He could kind of write his own script, go on stage, get a bunch of camera time.
Yeah, seriously.
I disagree, Keon. I think he'd be better as a defensive midfielder, as an actual player. I don't know if you guys noticed, but consistently this man would like block off the passing lanes for opposing teams in like the most crucial way possible. Yeah. Like
Demiro had to slide tackle him.
Yeah, there was an instance where Casimir actually tackled him because Lahoz was in the position where a defensive midfielder would normally be. And this is not just me. Just being biased and making this up. Iniesta, a long time ago, complained about his positioning. Lahoz actually went on an interview and said, Iniesta is the only person who has a problem with my positioning on the field. He doesn't like it. Nah, man, it's not just Iniesta who has a problem with it. I guarantee it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know anyone who really likes this referee. I remember he was the guy who was refereeing the Italy game. That was,
the qualifier, Sweden.
Yeah, the one that was supposed to get them in the World Cup. And if the coach hadn't been so dumb with his selection and tactics, Lahoz would have been a bigger story because his refereeing that game was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
I mean, no one likes him.
He was the, I'll just say, when you're, the referee is the protagonist, and there's not been a great match, and, you know, this match easily could have gone either way. Like, it could easily have ended in a tie, and La Hoss wasn't to blame, guys, for the absolutely catastrophic giveaway in the defense, where Sergio Ramos essentially passed it to an Espanol attacker who had a one-on-one chip Courtois and, like, plonked it off the crossbar. I mean, that was incredibly lucky for Real Madrid, and if that ball goes in, we are probably singing a very different song right now.
Yeah, you know what though, I feel like, I don't know if there's any game that we will just never concede chances, and obviously when we concede chances in this manner, like something totally preventable, like that Borja Iglesias chance to hit the bar, it's more frustrating than, you know, maybe if the opposing team actually builds up a really beautiful passing sequence and gets a shot on goal. But in my crazy, maybe possibly delusional, optimistic lens, is that we held this team. This kind of goes back to some of the stuff we said at the beginning of the season, knowing that we lose Ronaldo's shot volume and obviously his goals. How to compensate? We hope for an uptick from Bale and Benzema and Asensio and Isco and others. And, you know, maybe with Mariano, he scores 10 to 15. But we also brought forward the other proposition, or maybe it goes hand in hand with this, and this is something Lopetegui himself talked about, is reducing the number of chances that the opposing team creates and therefore reducing the number of chances we require. Our XG was quite low in this game. It was 1 point something. Espanyol's was 0.58, I believe. So in that sense, I still think like the fact that we were able to limit them to that one really golden chance, and that was just a Ramos brain fart. I'm not saying, like, you know, this is just, everything is just daisies and daffodils, but I really thought some of it was overblown, the fact that job done. Like, we really limited the chances of the opposition and controlled the game and got a W without our main goal scorer.
So I'm kind of going to go on my, like, little spiel where, like, I give a tactical breakdown. I don't know if you guys want to get any small points before that, but yeah, I have three main points to touch on. There was so much to talk about this game, but there were three main kind of tactical things I saw. So one was the Espanyol high press. Like, Gabe, you kind of touched on that. The refereeing certainly allowed that for that to thrive, but Espanyol were really well organized. They're really intense, and they deserve a lot of credit. So essentially, what I saw was, They had a 4-3-3 kind of like ours, and the front three pressed all the way to the keeper. So you had Iglesias, who would press Courtois, and he would block off the passing lane to Casemiro when he was doing it. And then you had Piatti and Perez would press Ramos and Varane. And then you had our central midfielders man-marked and our fullbacks man-marked. And that was how they were trying to prevent us from moving up the field. And I think we actually did a fairly decent job. Like, I think we had a little less than 19 passes, successful passes before a successful defensive action from them, which means their high press wasn't all that successful. But there were key moments, especially with Courtois, who completed only 3 out of 12 long balls, that we just looked shaky. And Espanyol's high press, you know, it really destabilized us at some points. Casemiro. Yeah. Surprisingly good. I mean, he didn't lose the ball once, and there were some situations where he was pressed by two or three players in different directions. I think he had his best game on the ball, probably like top three best games on the ball that I've ever seen, and I was really impressed with his performance. So there was that, which I think was the main way Espanyol created problems for us. And then I think once we got into the final third, we didn't really do as much as I would have liked us to, but there was this interesting tactical thing that Lopetegui did with the wingers and fullbacks. So Isco kind of had a weird role, right? Like, if you look at the pass map from 11 taken 11, Isco is like right in the middle because he moved everywhere. So one of the things that Lopetegui did with him was Isco and Asensio were constantly swapping flanks. That's why Isco's like average position is kind of in the middle, But it was more than that as well. Asensio, no matter which flank he was on, and was usually the left, was usually keeping the width while Isco would kind of come inside like an attacking midfielder. And that affected their relationship with the fullbacks they were next to. So whether it was Nacho or Odriozola, with Asensio, they would kind of stay inside almost in an inverted position. Whereas with Isco, you know, the fullback would take on a more traditional role. But it didn't really seem to result in much. Like, I think the best shots that Asensio got off were when Nacho was making traditional overlaps down the left and feeding balls into the box to him. So I don't know if this was necessarily a specific thing that Lopetegui planned. I know that it was obvious that he wanted Isco and Asensio to switch flanks, but about the whole like inverted fullback and traditional fullback thing, I don't know if that was just a result of Isco's natural tendencies and Odriozola and Nacho adjusting to it, or a concerted scheme that Lopetegui wanted to institute. Whatever it was, it didn't really do that much, and I think part of that had to do for two reasons. One, we didn't have Kroos, and his rapier-like diagonals are key at exploiting the space that the fullback creates, and usually it's the Carvajal, and Odriozola was actually in a lot of space, but we didn't exploit it enough, because when Isco came inside, Odriozola, the Espanyol fullback came inside, and therefore Odriozola was in space, but we didn't really access it enough. So that's maybe why it didn't result in anything, and also because Bale was missing, we lost that presence in the box. So whenever we created a free cross through this strategy, there was really only Benzema there, and even then Benzema wasn't providing that great of a presence. So then the third thing was the second half, where it kind of all changed, was in the beginning, Isco came inside, like he abandoned whatever he was doing in the first half and just kind of stuck to whatever wing Asensio was on. So it was like mostly on the left. It was these huge left-sided overloads. It looked pretty nice. We got a couple of shots. I think Isco and Modric got two of the best shots to start the half. And then Lopetegui changed everything by bringing on Lucas Vazquez for Ceballos, I think it was, and Isco just moved into midfield. And that substitution hurt us because Lucas Vazquez was a liability under the press. I mean, he's not usually a liability, but we know he's not the best in tight situations, and it showed versus Espanyol. And, you know, I think we lost control of the game at that point, and that's when Espanyol started to look more dangerous. And Mariano obviously came before that, but I didn't think that had much of a thing to do with us losing control. And then I think Lopetegui saw all of that and realized we needed to be more defensively stable, and then brought on Llorente. And I thought Marcos had a really good game. He was solid defensively. He played some nice balls on the counter. But that just kind of moved us into a defensive 4-2-3-1 that just ceded control of the game completely. And that's not something that I was particularly happy with, because I don't think we can suddenly defend deep after we were dominating possession and still look that solid, because that's just not our mentality. I mean, in the 89th minute, Sergio Ramos was running up into the box in open play, not even on a set piece, in open play to try to score, and we were only 1-0 up. If you want to sit deep, if you want to park the bus, then there needs to be a different mentality in this team, and we just don't have it, which is okay. I just think we need to see out games in the dominant position with the ball at our feet, dominating possession, unless from minute one, like in games we've seen over the past 6-7 years against Bayern Munich, which Carlo Ancelotti did. If we start from minute one, we prepare a week to park the bus, we can do it. But otherwise, I don't like this change that Lopetegui did. We've seen Benitez do it in the past. We've seen Zidane do it, and all of them decided it wasn't good. And Lopetegui's going to have to learn that real quick.
Whew. That's a lot. That was a lot. I'm just going to say it. I like it.
I think pretty much everything you said is accurate. I would add a couple of things, but I think just kind of frantically taking notes on what you were saying, trying to, I guess, discuss them chronologically. I think that Isco and Asensio interchangeability was interesting because, and Gabe and I talked about it on the midweek pod when we were kind of asking about Isco and Asensio and who plays, who should play in what role and all this. And I said, you know, if you had to choose and everybody's healthy, I would lean towards Asensio because the interchangeability he has for Bale, which to me looked much smoother than the way kind of Isco did it. And I thought while Isco was good in this game, I thought it felt a bit awkward when he linked up with Odriozola on the right flank. And I think some of that was because it's Isco's tendency is to like show for the ball in millimeters away from a teammate. And even though Odriozola was kind of confused, like there was chances where he could cross it and he scored running over and asked for the ball. And Odriozola was like, okay, well, you're the alpha, I guess. And here's the ball. And there were other times where Odriozola would look up and kind of see Modric or Isco in the box, sparsely attended in the box and flooded with Espanyol defenders. And he's like, well, I can't cross. And I thought obviously a solution there is just a clear solution is Gareth Bale, who helps with a lot of that stuff. I think just to add a couple of things to what Om said, and you refer to the pass maps. I think one of the telling things about the pass map, and it's been basically a thing throughout the entire season, whether it's Odriozola or Carvajal, a lot of Real Madrid's play is funneled to the left, and Odriozola or Carvajal can make that overlapping run. And this wasn't that dissimilar to that. I think one thing, though, is you didn't necessarily have Cruz's constant ability to switch the ball, yeah. Although I think Ceballos does it in his own way. Ceballos he doesn't play those long, really long vertical passes, but he can look up and just get the ball there quickly or use an extra man in between to get the ball over there quickly. So I think that was present, but not as much with Cruz, which leads me to a couple of other things. I think Ceballos was fantastic in this game. And I think in a completely different player than Toni Kroos, obviously, yep. Altogether, but he has his own stylistic way of playing. But, in a game where we had to create, his four key passes in just about an hour of play was very incisive. To me, one of the reasons we held Espanyol to such a low XG is because Espanyol just could not get out of the back. And I think our press was quite good, and Ceballos was a huge part of that. And Ceballos has always been very good at kind of understanding where to go in a Lopetegui scheme. I thought he was pressing brilliantly and the team was cohesive behind him. I thought he covered for Nacho quite well anytime Nacho went up the field and would sprint back if needed. And Casemiro was the other one. Om already mentioned about Casemiro, but I thought Casemiro was really good. And there was just a few times where it was like, it was him who was just kind of getting the team where Ramos misplaced a pass. So I think all of that, there were definitely good signs. And again, if we're going to limit opponents to chances, we stopped them in their own third, which I thought we did quite well in this game.
I agree. Go ahead.
I just want to quickly add, because I know I've talked a lot already, but I think Keon's point about the press is a really good one. And that's also why I didn't see a need for us to like step back and go deep, because our counter pressing is really good. And we've seen that from day one with Lopetegui, is he's made us quite a good pressing side. And I think we do it a little more selectively than other teams, so it doesn't look like we're getting exhausted in that sense. So I just didn't see the need to drop deep, and I thought we kind of gave away control of the game when we were controlling it, not just with the ball, but when we lost it, we were immediately winning it back, and Espanyol couldn't breathe.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. One of the interesting things about this match was that Madrid came out from the beginning and looked to execute counter presses quickly and efficiently in Espanyol's half from the beginning of the game. Like, we've seen Madrid in other matches kind of sit back and maybe try to do the counter press more in the second half, but this one, everyone was in buying in from the very beginning. Very impressive, I thought. I think we're going to see more of this. I mean, really, Om and I had a conversation earlier today with Jamin Moore, who was talking about how, one of the things that the new kind of advanced statistics are showing us is how important it is to win when you win a ball in the opposition's half, how big a deal that is in terms of just the chance that you're going to score. So I think that entirety of football is going to move towards more of this kind of more of a pressing style. So I'm very excited and glad to see that. I also wanted to just add to your point about Odriozola. I mean, the kid is very good. I was very, very impressed today. And what was also, I think, impressive about his performance today was that the teammates really were using his speed. Like, you would see these balls that the instinct says no one is making this, and then he would make it. I mean, like, he would go and get those balls and keep them in play and trigger attacks. And Espanyol had to spend a lot of time dealing with his speed. You would see opponents back off of him. You would see people, you know, have to worry about balls in behind them that normal people wouldn't be able to make it to. He is very fast. And I thought he was also very, you know, equipped. He was very, you know, strong and useful defensively, which is a bit of a change from last season. Very, very, very good pickup. And now you see why Carvajal is working so hard, because this kid is the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, the thing that continually strikes me about him is exactly what you said, is that there's passes that look like they're overhit, and he just gets there. He just, you know, this is why he's called the Flash.
He is?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah. This was a huge thing with Sociedad last season, that fans would buy Flash t-shirts with his face on it and
that's
wear
awesome.
It in the stadium.
That's
yeah.
really cool.
We need to
do that.
Continue that.
I want to do that. Someone make that shirt. I want to buy it. Daniel. By the way, everyone should go RealMadridChamps.com. Go buy your shirts. Those rule, dude. I've got a few of them myself. And if you want to add a shirt with Odriozola on the and just avoid any copyright issues, but you know what I'm saying, like, you know what you're doing. I would buy the crap out of that shirt. That's what I'm saying. Let's see. I'm looking at my notebook. I'm trying to find some other things. I was also very impressed. I mean, so I think one of you tweeted this. This match shows how important Bale is to this scheme, and that they looked toothless.
Yeah, that was me.
And the expected goals bore that. I mean, it really did. It was Madrid only had something like 1.something expected goals, and that actually is a huge, you know, quite a dip for Real Madrid generally, which as a team averages, I think, around 3 expected goals.
Yeah, I think the thing is really that's kind of what I think people are kind of underrating about we lost Ronaldo. I just don't think it's that simple that other players step up and like chip in. Like, I think that happens, right? Like, honestly, that's what we've been seeing thus far, but it's just going to be a lot tighter. And Bale is really the only other player after Ronaldo leaves that can produce the volume and the quality at an absolutely world-class rate.
Yeah.
And I think we're still hoping Benzema will get there. Like, from an expected goal perspective, Benzema has not at the moment. I mean, even when he started off the season scoring well, he was scoring well above his expected goals. And I think today we saw a little bit of the Benzema the last two seasons, where he was fairly good in possession, fairly good at helping us move up the pitch, fairly good at helping us beat the press, but was just a non-factor in the box. He had one shot and was from outside the box, and otherwise he didn't really provide much else. To me, it was kind of similar in the Athletic Bilbao game, but I was a lot less critical because his role against the press was absolutely instrumental. I mean, Athletic Bilbao was suffocating us so much. If we didn't have Benzema on the field,
it
would have been a lot worse. But this game, Benzema played his role, but players like Ceballos were a lot more crucial to us beating the press. And I think we really, really missed that presence in the box and the ability for someone like Bale to just create shots for themselves. And that is why I'm just always just knocking on wood whenever I talk about Bale, because if he gets injured, I think that's a real worry for us. Because, yeah, for a certain period of time, Asensio will pick up the odd goal. Isco will as well, maybe from a free kick like we saw in the Champions League. But when it comes to week in, week out, producing high-quality shots and being, from an expected goals perspective, expected to score goals nearly every game, Bale is the only player we have now for that. And that's why we're going to have to really hope from some seasons, from great scoring seasons, from a career perspective, from the likes of Mariano, Isco, Asensio, and especially Karim Benzema, if we don't want to look thin in that department.
My feeling is that we will probably see a signing, but in this match, it would have been very interesting to see Mariano a little bit earlier than he came on. I actually don't think he was great in the time that he had, but I think that this may have been a game where just his more like playing more of a traditional nine role could have been useful for Madrid against this Espanyol side that played a very physical and very compact defensive match. Like they didn't cede the ball to Madrid exactly, but what they did do is whenever Madrid got the ball, Espanyol managed to get back in correct position, break down the passing lanes, and then hit Madrid and hit him hard. Like there were a lot of plays in this match that were very, 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 very physical. And I think a player like Mariano could have maybe brought a level of physicality to the team that Benzema, for whatever reason, just doesn't bring. And also just playing more as that traditional nine sort of forces them to deal with that that presence in their box at all times. I don't know what you guys thought. I don't think I would have started him, but I think I may have given him more like 40 minutes out there, like or 30.
Yeah, I think he has a case because, I mean, going back to the Benzema discussion, we did talk about his, you know, his uptick in shots this season. It may have normalized a little bit now, whereas in the first couple of games he was doing like 4 to 6, if I remember correctly. He's averaged out around 2.2 now, which is pretty much his career average. Unless he's playing for France, which is like in World Cup, Euro Cup, he's done like 4 to 6 shots per game. But I think if that normalizes, and it may normalize also, it's interesting to see because his dynamic with playing alongside Asensio and Isco was a bit different, where they all kind of do not identical things, but a lot of similar things in dropping deep and trying to create. And as Omanai who discussed this on the podcast a few weeks ago, where like we were talking about what the definition of link-up play actually is, and how in theory, the more players you have in your team who can drop deep and create and move between the lines, the better. And I thought actually, if you go and look at the team structure offensively in this game, despite not having a prolific amount of chances, I like the movement from Isco, Asensio, and Benzema generally moving behind the lines, and it was never stagnant. But that killer shot creation from Bale was missing. And I'm not, you know, I don't know if Mariano changes completely, but I think you're right. I think he at least has a case, because if Bale's not playing, maybe you kind of shift things around and put Mariano in there so he can, because one thing I did notice immediately, the body language from Nacho, for example, to put a cross in was much different when, as soon as Mariano came in. Like one of the first possessions he came in, Nacho looked up and tried to get in the ball in the box. And maybe that's also part of the reason why, you know, Ramos was trying to get in there late. I'm not excusing it, but we just really didn't have that presence in the box. And, you know, Mariano, for his very limited time on the pitch, did have a couple key passes. And a shot, and you know, at least I think caused some chaos. It might not have been the perfect, you know, game from him, but I think his, in theory, what he brings to the table, you know, he has a case to start in this particular situation where there is no bail.
I think
the thing is with Benzema is he has only one headed goal over the last two league seasons. And if you include this season, that's two. Those are not promising numbers. I mean, if you go back to the 2015-16 season, where like that was Benzema's goal scoring peak, it was a lot better. I think he scored like 5 or 6 headed goals in the league, which is quite impressive considering Bale also scored like a career high in headed goals. And obviously you have Ronaldo, who's superb in the air. So again, like it's still early. We'll see how Benzema adapts, but looking at the historical trend and knowing what we know about Benzema now, he just doesn't provide that threat in the box, even when he's free to do so, because he's just not as sharp, as strong, and as quick as he used to be. I mean, it's just natural physical decline, which is why I think when Bale isn't there, because in a similar way, I wouldn't say that Benzema is playing like the same role he's playing with Ronaldo, but when Bale is there, he's kind of also you know, kind of moving out and kind of enhancing Bale's ability to find spaces in the box. He's ensuring he's not getting in Bale's way. He's still more of a facilitator. But because Ronaldo's shot volume isn't there, Benzema still has more chances to shoot. But when Bale isn't there and we have someone like Isco and Asensio who don't shoot a lot, and when they do, it's not necessarily always the highest quality attempts, you would logically then need someone who produces a lot of shots and in pretty high quality situations. And I think if we're going to rotate like this, I think you should rotate Benzema out of the lineup as well and put Mariano on, because you already have so many creative playmakers who just, it isn't in their DNA to shoot that much. You need someone like Mariano. But in the end of the day, it didn't really hurt us. Like Kian said, there was still a lot of nice stuff going on. Benzema was still a pretty key part in us dominating possession and also in our pressing, which he doesn't get enough credit for, but we'll see. It's an interesting thing to keep track of.
I'm looking more through my notes. I think, Kian, I think it's time, man. I think it's time. Marcos Llorente putting in a huge shift. I think maybe his best game with the first team. Incredibly, I thought he was incredibly good.
My only complaint is that he came on during the time I was writing my reaction. So, and that's why it took me so long to write my reaction, because I had to keep flipping screens to not miss any time, you know, the commentator was mentioning his name. Not to say we're surprised, but when we talked about this on previous podcasts, and again, this is, goes back to a podcast Om and I recorded a few weeks ago, we were talking about the case for Llorente more often because of what he brings to the table. Like, stylistically, in theory, it's exactly what Lopetegui needs. He reads the game, covers passing lanes, distributes quite quickly and efficiently. And I thought, you know, you saw the flashes of Alaves Marcos. And we almost said, like, he just needs a game or two to just break in and gain Lopetegui's trust. And this was a good start for him. I don't even know if it's fair to say we saw Alaves' version of Marcos, because I think overall Marcos has looked quite good this year. But because maybe what he did in this particular game was more flashy or more visible to like the stuff we're desensitized to, like the stuff he does without the ball and stuff, maybe it just sticks out more. And I guess the one main play that sticks out where I was just kind of holding my seat and also just gradually getting out of it very slowly. And then by the time the ball came to him to shoot, I was just hands in my head, just... I was like, please God, let me have this moment. But you know, it's not his forte also to kind of shoot from where he is. It's not his game at all, like that kind of shooting an offensive
creation. No, but I mean, he hit it well and he hit it.
He did. He made a good run up there, yeah.
And he got in the right position. He just hit it right at the keeper. It happens to the best of them. But that wasn't even, I mean, one of the things that his addition brought was in a game that was getting out of hand for Madrid because of the physicality, because of the terrible and random refereeing, and because of the Madrid seeming inability to deal with the combination of those two things, he brought some level of calm and control back to the match. And that is exactly what I would want from Marcos. And what he also did, Kian, that I was very impressed by was he played some great defense.
Yeah, from what I saw, I took note, he had a really nice interception when he came on. And I thought just he was constantly moving without the ball to ensure that he's just helping to cover as much as he can in a game where you just need to secure it. So I think whatever Lopetegui said to him and said, you know, just make sure to cover and ensure we get these 3 points. And he went in there and I thought, you know, he worked hard, which we're not too surprised about. But also I thought he was very smart about covering and covering those passing lanes and definitely wasn't a liability on the ball at all. Not that he is, but, you know, completed all his passes, didn't misplace any of them. So this is a good start for him.
Yeah, yeah, really, really good start. Very impressive for me. One of the highlights of this entire match. I don't have any more to say specifically about this match. I don't know if you guys have stuff in your notebooks you want to bring up, you want to chat about. I'm happy to go to questions, though.
I mean, I had some things to say about Llorente, but it's related to a specific question. So
perfect.
Other than that, I'm ready to move on.
All right. Keon?
Let's do questions. Let's go.
All right. Mix it up. Sad. God, I've done it's a long day, man. Doing wedding plan. I'm sorry. All right.
No, please do not be sorry. I thought it was a great transition for what it's worth. It was
really good. It's all staying in.
Yeah.
Saad Omar. Oh, by the way, if you toss us a few dollars, $3 a month, and you get access to all of our Patreon content. $5 a month, and you get your question answered on every show, guaranteed. One question. So these are from our guaranteed $5 patrons, and there's some pretty good questions this week, I think. Saad Omar asks us, hey guys, would you guys be writing any pieces on the new Bernabeu Stadium improvements that are being planned? I've never gotten to visit the Bernabeu. I hope to someday. Is there a particular time of the year you would recommend we visit?
We
did write a piece on the stadium improvements.
Matt
Wiltsy wrote, yeah.
He wrote two. We talked about this, I think, on pods before. So there is content out there from us on this.
One of the things about that's going on with this is people are misunderstanding sort of what it is, and we're trying to correct that misunderstanding, but it is present and consistent and constant and it rises to the level of Ramon Calderon, the former president of Real Madrid.
Oh, God.
Having an absolute like meltdown on Twitter today that involved him.
He doesn't have many followers and he only got like one like on that. It was weird.
Yeah, because no one really fucking knows insane. Him. Because what he's saying is nuts.
That rant was amazing, absolutely amazing. I can't believe this guy was our ex-president.
He does a classic Twitter meltdown thing where he just tweets through it. And like he says something like, you know, he compares Florentino Perez to a dictator who spat all over every Spaniard. He went on to do the classic old person thing of using his phone to take a picture of his computer screen. On the computer screen were slides from some sort of PowerPoint that he gave in like 2006. I mean, it was a full nut job rant, like, you know, losing his mind kind of thing about this relatively cheap and relatively obvious investment. So he's having a normal one. He also retweeted some article. I don't know what that was. Yeah,
it was an article that was essentially just attacking Florentino Perez. It said like something like the financial legacy of this stadium deal will carry over for the next like either it will carry over for the next 160 years or it will allow Florentino to be in power in some capacity till he's 106. It was something insane like that.
People are losing their minds over this. They just don't. I mean, to be frank, this is a very cut and dry issue. The improvements have been in the works forever. The stadium will be upgraded to include a series of things that bring in more money. It's a capital expenditure that you're doing, buying stuff to improve real properties. One of the safest investments in all of the world. Banks love to give you money to do that because what it means is that the property that you own goes up in value, and that's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to turn the Bernabeu from what it is, which is a great stadium but a little aging, into a state-of-the-art modern new stadium that will include what I'm understanding a couple of like five-star Michelin restaurants and maybe even a hotel. I mean, it's a total revamp, and it's the model that a lot of American stadiums are going with now, and it's a really good investment, I think, and it's pretty crazy that the way that people are having their, like, just absolute nut jobs. I mean, there's some level of hatred of debt that that is what is driving this. People just reject the idea that Real Madrid would use corporate bonds or, you know, take out a loan from a bank to pay for this. But it's just that is a normal thing that organizations do, and it's a way to, you know, increase the amount of profit that you get off the eventual end product. I mean, leverage is good as long as you're like a stable and well-structured business. You should have some amount of your money that you spend on things coming in the form of loans. It's just it's how you make money.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's how you do that and preserve cash flow. And I mean, I, you know, go back and obviously read the articles that Matt wrote. I guess the latest update for this, I mean, maybe we can, you know, post this on the site too, but, you know, just because we're discussing it. The latest update is that it's pretty well going to go ahead. And there are a few just kind of details of the loan and the financial side of things and how it's going to be broken down. And that, I think, maybe needs to be approved, but it's pretty much going to go through. And just kind of talking about the finances of it, it's going to cost around $525 million, which is going to be funded. And Florentino said today that, you know, the interest rates right now are the lowest they've been in a long time, and this is the right time to move ahead with it. It's expected and estimated that the club will get $150 million in revenue, additional revenue every year just from the stadium.
It's such a no-brainer. Yeah. It's hard to even...
Just think of it like those giant... The entire stadium is a giant screen. Do you know how much it'll cost to put an advertisement on that, you know?
Yeah.
The shopping center alone, it's progressive. It's financially lucrative. It makes sense. You know, I think we're all for it.
Yeah. In terms of visiting the Bernabeu, there's no specific time of year you should go. I liked going in the summer. You don't have the issue of running into a game. If you just want to visit the stadium, if you want to go to the Bernabeu and experience a game, then you have to go during the season. So the season runs from about September all the way through, hopefully, like, you know, early May. I mean... Yeah. That's it. Early June. Yeah, sorry.
For us, early. It's always late. Yeah, late into the season, which is a good thing.
Right.
Obviously, I think you would want to time it with a game because then you can do the tour of the museum, whatever, which is always cool. But you can also go to a game, and if you can swing a big game, do a big game because the atmosphere is obviously going to be better.
Essa Hariri asks us. Hey guys, two questions. Although I was laughed at by my friends, I was actually one of the few people who were and still are optimistic about this season, this team, and this coach. However, I'm worried about our depth quality. Who is Marcelo's replacement? He cannot play every game this season, and Nacho does not help much offensively. Who is Casemiro's replacement? Clearly, Llorente is not ready nor trusted by Lopetegui. Who is Kroos's replacement? Ceballos is very good. I don't see him doing the switch of play with accurate crosses and vertical passes that Kroos does with ease. Don't you think Ceballos needs to be more? This is like nine questions, but whatever. This needs to be more if he wants to be a starter, more than just moving around and passing the ball. And the second question is the new stadium plan official now? All right, we already answered that. Okay, depth questions. Who's Marcelo's replacement?
I mean, we discussed this previous podcast, like Nacho, and we're just going to have to be content with that because we loaned Teo. I think all of us kind of said, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but we would have preferred Teo to stay here because we could have seen him getting a lot of minutes, but this is just going to how it's going to be for the rest of the season. If Marcelo is not playing, it's Nacho.
Yep, that's it. That's how it is. And so, yeah, Nacho doesn't offer as much offensively as Marcelo, but no left back in the world offers as much offensively as Marcelo. He is, I mean, he created and pioneered this position. This is, I don't know what to say. You can't, it's like, how do you replace Cristiano Ronaldo? You don't. You have to have a slightly different game plan when you don't have the best left back in the world starting for your team.
Yeah, my only, I guess I don't have much to add, but I'm kind of baffled at what happened to Sergio Reguilón because he just kind of just disappeared. He's not playing in Castilla, and he's not playing with the A team. I don't know what exactly happened to him.
Yeah, that's a little strange.
Honestly, I think if you wanted a stopgap and you wanted to help develop this guy, I think he was ready. I think everyone who paid attention to him, even if you just looked at preseason, he seemed ready to step up. And so it's curious that we decided not to do that, especially when Nacho can get minutes as a center back because we know we have injury issues with Vallejo. Varane is always questionable. But I mean, I guess we'll manage because in previous seasons we didn't have, Carvajal didn't have a backup and we've always been able to manage. So I guess it's just how it's going to be.
In terms of Casemiro's replacement, I think Llorente is ready and he is earning Lopetegui's trust with play and shifts like he did against Espanyol. Lopetegui has clearly experimented with Kroos playing a little deeper, with Modric playing a little deeper. I don't know if there's a direct replacement for some of these players. Like, you just have to switch the scheme around.
So this is where I kind of wanted to say my bit on Llorente. So I agreed with all of what you said, but I think there's a plausible reason for why Lopetegui hasn't seemed too enamored with Llorente beyond just the fact that
I don't want to hear it.
The weird rumors.
Earmuffs going up.
He's not doing well in training, which I don't know if I completely buy, but that I think the fact that Lopetegui has decided to play Kroos as the second option defensive midfielder is really telling for what he wants as an alternative to Casemiro. So he just doesn't want someone who's better on the ball. He wants someone who provides something to the opposite end of what Casemiro provides, which is just brilliance on the ball in all facets. So not just press resistance, not just ball retention, but with the switches of play, with the vertical passing. And I think that's why he put Kroos there, because we've seen Lopetegui kind of trying to adjust around Casemiro. I think he's settled on how he wants to do it, but especially early in the season, we saw a lot of permutations and combinations. Lopetegui, I think, is saying, if I'm not going to have Casemiro's supreme defensive abilities, which is what I'm making so many adjustments for, then I don't think it's worth it to then compromise in the middle. If I'm not going to have Casemiro, then I want a superb player on the ball. And I think Llorente is maybe just a bit too much in the middle for his liking, because despite the fact that Llorente is better than Casemiro at passing, he's better with press resistance, his strongest skills by far are still his defensive abilities. It's just in a different way from Casemiro. So I think when Lopetegui says if Casemiro is not on the field, I want Kroos. I mean, that could obviously change. Maybe Lopetegui thinks, the risks are just too much when I play Kroos, so maybe Llorente is the best option. But I think that's the thought process that's going through his head
I think Lopetegui is going to, and has in his career and will now, continue to switch up schemes based on the players that he has available and based on the players that he wants to start. You don't have the kind of rigidity that Zidane had where you really needed a like-for-like replacement for every player because if someone got injured, it wasn't like they were going to change the scheme. But with Lopetegui, I think we will see changes in scheme. We have seen changes in scheme. So, I think these questions are important, but they're also, we're living in a different world in terms of Real Madrid right now. We have a new coach who's kind of feeling things out and, I think we'll see. There are schemes where you can hide, you can play without a defensive midfielder or someone playing deep, but you're not really traditional defensive midfield. You can make the scheme work and not give up too many problems defensively. It's just he has to think about how exactly to do that. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't. These are tough questions because I'm not sure they are. I'm not sure that this is the exact answer. I think the better question is what scheme should or what tactic should Lopetegui employ when Casemiro is out, and less about who it should come in like for Casemiro.
Well, I think Llorente needs to make a little bit of an adjustment to his playing style, because I think with Castilla, and it's his opinion, others a whole, I don't know about you, Keon, but his passing was a lot braver and it was more vertical. And then I think his stint at Alaves, it's difficult because, again, scheme affects this, but that element of his game just kind of disappeared. Yeah. Like, he plays too safe at times, and he really needs to look to instigate things on the ball in a similar, obviously it can't, it's not going to be at the level of Kroos. Kroos is one of the greatest of all time when it comes to this, but he needs to adapt his playing style to, I want to say, be more direct, but be more vertical, be more proactive in possession, look to start plays rather than just laying it off to the central midfielders ahead of him. Because if he just does that all the time, then I think Lopetegui can rightly say, yeah, sure, maybe you're a bit safer in against presses, but then what's the real difference between you and Casemiro? I mean, Casemiro is better defensively, so I might as well play him or just go with Kroos instead, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I'm careful to brand his, I guess, his vertical passing as a weakness, because with Alaves, the weird thing about it was that because they played in such a deep low block, under Pellegrino, because, you know, they had the resources they had. When he did get the ball, he made an interception or he just was able to win possession, he would look up and he would find the quickest, the easiest, I wouldn't say easiest, but just the first outlet he would see, he would get it there. If there were no outlets, he would hold the ball, do his, you know, little famous turns, you know, kind of 360s and 180s until he finds an outlet. Oftentimes there were no vertical outlets. You know, there was Daverson or Ibai Gomez in front of him sometimes, but they were marked. So I think for that reason, his vertical passing stats took a bit of a hit for those reasons. And I mean, with Castilla, I don't know how much he was even. I think you probably saw it more with Castilla, although he really started taking a leap at the end of his Castilla tenure, not so much in the season. But I think, for what it's worth, I thought it's looked good this season. I mean, it's not, like you said, it's never going to be, he's never going to be like Pirlo or Xavi or Kroos with it. But he looked fine with it yesterday. He looked fine with it this season. Maybe that's something Lopetegui has been able to work with him on. You know, I don't think it's out of his toolbox, his skill set to do that.
Oh, absolutely not. I was just more of talking about like a mentality shift. But again, the sample size with him isn't great. I mean, last season, we didn't really see it again. Like, I couldn't really see, like, that vertical passing and that more proactiveness in possession that I really want from him. But then again, some of the games he played in, especially the Copa del Rey, like, our midfield was a mess. So it's hard. Yeah. I think, Keon, you're right to say to be careful about branding it as a weakness, because there's so much context there. I guess the only way is we'll see how it goes this season. But I'm just trying to like probe the mind of Lopetegui a bit. This might just be his perspective on the issue, but we'll see.
Let's go on. Sajid Reyaz asks us, with everyone talking about the fierce competition between Isco and Asensio, my question is, why can't they both play? Why not play the trio of Isco, Bale, and Asensio? And why isn't anyone talking about the elephant in the room, which is Karim Benzema? His last three games against stronger opposition has been pretty lackluster. And Keon mentioned about the fact that there was only Isco and Modric who arrived in the box for crosses in the absence of Bale in yesterday's match. My question is, what is Benzema doing on this team if he's not a guy getting the end of those crosses? So, all right, the first set of questions are about Isco, Bale, and Asensio. I think they can all play together, and we'll see it. I think we're going to see that combination at some point.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I wrote about before the season started. I thought this is definitely a front three that would work, I think. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that we'll see it a few times a season. I think with Mariano in the picture, maybe it's less, there's a less bit of an urgency to play Asensio as a false nine or play Bale kind of in that more central role, because then you have Mariano who can also kind of slide in. But I like this trio. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really agree with you guys here. I'm always like been a little more cautious about talking about players as a false nine. Like there was this period where we're like, James, you know, should play that role, and Zidane did try him there, and it didn't work out at all because it takes a very specific skill set to be able to do it. I think Asensio honestly has the most potential out of them. Isco just doesn't have the mentality, in my opinion. He doesn't have the goal scoring, you know, the goal scoring mentality, the ability in the box. Whereas I think Asensio, he's more direct. He tends to be more incisive. I think therefore he has the best chance. And I definitely do not like Bale in a center forward position. We saw that a ton last season, and that was what eventually led to Bale being benched because Zidane saw his form there. It wasn't good at all. So, I mean, Benzema has to be there because he's really the only proper center forward we have aside from Mariano. I mean, I also wouldn't agree that his last three games have been lackluster. I think his game against Espanyol was lackluster, but his game against Athletic Bilbao was brilliant. I mean, he was one of, like we mentioned before, he was one of the key players to beating the press against AS Roma. I thought he was fine. But yeah, it's difficult. I'm open to seeing it being experimented with because obviously there's a strong chance that I'm completely wrong here. But if it's going to happen, I think it would have to be Asensio in that false nine position. But I'm just, you know, it's one of the things I can live without seeing in my time watching Real Madrid.
Well, I mean, this is what I'm saying. Like with Mariano, there is less of an urgency to play this front three because when Mariano wasn't signed, I mean, this was going to be a real thing we would probably have seen if Benzema is not playing. But
it's
my reasoning behind it is that, you know, albeit very, very small sample size, we saw with Spain, Asensio played that role to a T. And I think, you know, it's not something that we have a large sample size, obviously. But to me, prototypically, the way he plays, I think he can play that role because he's much, out of the two between him and Isco, he's much better at dealing with a role where that requires some positional flexibility and understanding where to be in the false nine. He's kind of built to play it. And if false nine is not something that we see too often in football, and it's one of those things that only a few people can really play it, and it has to require a really proper scheme to play it. But to me, before Mariano was signed, this was an option. Like, you know, my reasoning was behind because Asensio has played that role perfection before, so it wasn't inconceivable for me to see this front three. But again, with Mariano here, I see less of an urgency to need to shift it this way because I think Mariano is very good at what he does.
Shea Kateri's entire question is about Mariano. So Shea says, it's an interesting question. I don't think we need to go into the Benzema stuff so much, unless you guys are desperate to talk about that. I think we've hashed that out a fair amount already. All right, Shea asks, comparing Asensio and Mariano, I had an observation. I'm a huge Asensio fanboy, but Mariano is a more mature player. This is awesome. I saw several Aristotelian virtues, wisdom, courage, moderation, and prudence in him, unlike Asensio. The 87th minute attack with Asensio when he decided to carry the ball and not pass it to a free Mariano was the best contrast. Mariano, however, carried the ball today and against Roma, usually successfully, in difficult situations, and passed it off to the ideal teammate unexpectedly. He doesn't over or underdo his play. It is very interesting how mature he, although to be fair, he is older than Asensio, he is. He always makes the best decision and is never in a hurry to pass, dribble, or shoot, always making the best decision at the best time. I really have loved his play in the limited time he has had. Truly a mature player. Three small notes. I wish we had played Marcelo or Carvajal. We were really toothless on both sides. Really quickly, I disagree with that. I think Odriozola was really good, and Madrid's play was directed through the right wing a fair amount, and through Odriozola. I think that he was good. our defensive strategy has been flawless, and we have conceded fewer goals so far than Atletico, as many as Barca with one game less, which means Barca conceded two to Girona, which means we scored fewer than Barca also. We finally have learned how to press. And this is one last note. Hey, Gabe, in case you're not on the show this midweek, I want to wish you a great wedding and an amazing marriage. Thank you.
Yes.
I know.
Big week for Gabe Lestra.
It is.
Man, I'm so excited for you, brother.
Shay says, I know from personal experience how difficult it is to find a woman who puts up with sports fanaticism, not to mention your out-of-wedlock adult son, Mariano, and your gay boyfriend, Marcelo, on the side. It's true. That's correct. I wish a lifetime of happiness and a big, beautiful family. Thank you, Shay. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
So there's like a lot here. I'm just gonna talk about the Asensio Mariano thing, because that seemed to be the biggest part of this.
Yeah, dude.
So I don't know if I really like agree with this assessment of Mariano. I think he is a pretty mature player, because he's 25 years old and what Asensio is like 21, I think. So I mean, I guess you'd expect, but like this, you know, as Shay describes it, he always makes the best decision. He's never in a hurry to pass, dribble, or shoot. Always picks the best decision at the best time. I mean, I don't know if I really agree with that, simply because Mariano's a fairly limited player. I mean, I love the guy. I argued in favor of him getting the number 7 shirt, but what he's good at is shooting from distance and being a threat in the box, and not really that much else. I mean, his ability on the ball, I actually noticed that some of his passes, like when he's trying, he had a couple of situations in the past couple of matches where he's trying to slide a pass, I mean, through to Asensio or Isco on the last line of the defender. And it was just timed badly, because that's just not his strength. So, and also because like Mariano's sample size of passes on the ball has been small. Like, I don't really know if this is an assessment that we can make, like that he's super mature. I mean, if you look at his Leon games, it's just not like, I don't want to say he's not, but it's just not something that stands out to you, because if he gets the ball from outside the box, 50% of the time he's looking to strike it from range. Otherwise, he's just not involved in build-up. So it's kind of a weird assessment to make, but I guess sort of it stands. But yeah, I mean, I just say Asensio's ability, decisions on the ball, outside the box, like far surpass Mariano's.
Yeah, I mean, I think, having said that, I think, and I mean, to me, this doesn't really have much to do with Asensio. And I guess to compare these particular traits is, it may be unfair. And I can't remember this specific moment in the 87th minute. I can't really go back and watch it now. But I would say that I think what Mariano has done well this season is not be afraid to get his teammates involved, especially on a counterattack. And things he did well against Roma, dropping deep to win possession and act as a ball carrier in transition, and then lay it off to a teammate. But also, I want Mariano to be selfish, because outside of Bale, I think he's going to be one of those guys who will mm-hmm. who will be able to create goals from nothing for us. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, in that sense, I'm not sure I want Mariano to even be too unselfish anyway. I think he's the one who needs to put the ball in the net, even if it's from an absurd position, to kind of create that chaos.
I mean, yeah, he's good from range. You want him shooting from those positions.
In terms of the defense, this is a good thing to close out on. I think we should be lauded. This team should be lauded for their defensive work. They've looked really good. I mean, obviously the catastrophic giveaway from Ramos was terrible, but generally the defense has looked really good, and that's with substitutions, with different players rotating in and out. I'm very impressed. The expected goals for Espanyol was like 0.4, which was amazing, and it was basically all on that one shot. So, I mean, this is another great game for the defense. This is a game where Madrid could have given up a lot more opportunities to Espanyol, but the defense was strong and it stood by. And I I'm really excited about the way that Lopetegui has organized the defense. Like I'm something that I'd like to do is go and see how many expected goals Madrid has allowed opponents to accrue over the season, because my guess is that it's pretty low. So
I just pulled that up right now. Just bear with me for a sec. Yeah, so for expected goals against, yeah, never mind. I'm looking at 2016-17-18. Can't find it, but you can go to understat.com. You'll be able to see that statistic for yourself, and I'm assuming it'll be one of the best in the league.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone through it individually after each game and discussed it, and I don't remember it being high. I think the highest it's been was actually Bilbao, which was only like
okay,
one
yeah,
point
I just
something.
Pulled it up now. We have the best expected goal against figure in the league, so we would have been expected to only concede 3.57 goals, and we conceded 3 goals, so that is pretty incredible.
Wow,
we've never
that's amazing.
We just start.
That's amazing. That's very impressive, especially against Athletic and Espanyol, who both have strong teams. That's really good. Okay, guys, that is your show for this week. I need to go because I'm exhausted and need to do more wedding planning stuff. I will be on the Wednesday show, at least I plan to be, but I will be missing the show on next weekend, and I will be missing the show the next Wednesday show also, because I will be married.
Exciting times.
All right. All right, guys. So until Wednesday.
Patron shout-outs.
Yes, patron shout-outs. My bad.
Okay. We'll do it quickly. As you guys all know, patreon.com/managingmadrid is where you go to pledge. If you like the show, you want to get different rewards, access to bonus shows like our Loan Tracker podcast, our midweek Champions League /La Liga/Copa del Rey post-game shows, mailbags, but also, you know, other rewards, which you can check out on patreon.com/managingmadrid. One of your rewards, if you pledge $10 or more, is you get a specific shout out on the podcast. So shout out to these $10 plus patrons: Sergio Monleon, Tyler Dixon, Raul Gutierrez, Gary Cohut, Peña Marerista, San Francisco Bay Area.
All right.
You won. I love it. Welcome. Nick DeStefani, Raghav Potluri, Bjorn Salvador, Dan Berthy, John Fernandez, Frederick Sundros, Adolfo Chamale Perez, Anas Alazawi, Sheikh Atiri, Red Bat, Leon Stavronakis, Armin Gashi, Eric Rogers, Sujay Wani, Nick Ribeiro, Yahya Ibrahim, Said Mahad, Vicky Cohen, Magnus Lex, Jason Fitz, Anton Hackberg, Solomon Ortiz, Jeanette, Jimmy Obeid, and Daniel Smith. Thank you all.
Thank you all so much. You guys are wonderful. Thank you. And thank you to the, I know you're probably not listening to this, but to the woman who wrote to me about my article about Real Madrid's female lack of a women's team. That meant a lot. So thank you. All right, guys. Until Wednesday, then. Hala Madrid.
Hala Madrid.